This is the story of one man with one camera who spent a year trying to cover every armed conflict in the world.
There were people here trying to find other victims. And there's a lot of anger here, a lot of seething anger. I talked to certain people that were on the streets when we came in right after the missile strike, said they hated America. They didn't even mention Israel, but they hated America. And you hear people right now cheering, doing a Hezbollah cheer.
That was the sound of the unrest in Lebanon July of 2006, as heard and recorded by Kevin Seitz. Seitz spent a year covering conflicts from the anarchy of Somalia to the explosive war between Israel and Hezbollah, posting videos and daily reports on Yahoo. Now, I knew Kevin in a previous life when he was a freelancer for NBC News. It was a really mainstream job that never really seemed to fit his sensibilities. He joined me in the studio this fall to give a firsthand account of his experience covering war as chronicled in his new book, In the Hot Zone, One Man, One Year, 20 Wars. According to your book, you traveled to over 30 countries, Lebanon, Haiti, Uganda. Of all the conflicts you covered, which one really still stays with you?
They all stay with me in one shape or form. And, you know, it's interesting because you talked about our time at MSNBC together and NBC, and I really felt that, you know, television is a powerful medium, but we just weren't getting enough time to tell the stories, a minute, 32 minutes. Mm-hmm. And here I had this opportunity to tell a story not in one dimension, but in three, video, still photography, and text dispatches. And then to deliver it all on the internet where it could be archived forever. And so those stories became very powerful vignettes from all of those different places. But I think very specifically of the Congo over and over again. The New York Times recently did a take out on this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a year and a half ago when I was in the DRC, they were experiencing that epidemic of rape as a weapon of war. Mm-hmm. And interviewing these young women that had encountered such amazing horror, but it wasn't just their misery that we were reporting on. It was their resilience, too. There were a lot of children that resulted from these rapes. And instead of rejecting them outright and, you know, imbuing that situation with hatred or rejection, they transformed it into this sense of love, naming their children things like Barwana, which means goodness in their name, in their language, and love and hope, and transforming that.
You spoke about the amount of time and the way you can tell a story and really develop it. It seems like a dream assignment for a lot of journalists, especially ones who cover international relations and international conflicts. But of doing it, what is the challenge of it that came up and smacked
There's
you in the
many.
Face? The one that you didn't expect.
It's a dream and it's a nightmare. I mean, for instance, when I was working in television for NBC, I was a television reporter and producer, but I would write my blog at night. They weren't conflicting in the reporting. I didn't have to do them both at the same time. One was an actual news report. The other was more of a diary. And in doing this job, I had two cameras on my shoulder, a notepad in my hand. You know, which tool do you use mm-hmm. first when you go out in the field? And I was using all the wrong tools when I started. I was taking notes when something dramatic was happening in front of me. I was taking still photographs when it was inappropriate. I was shooting video when nothing was happening. I needed to use the strengths of all of those mediums. Take notes when things are calm. Use the video to capture the inherent drama of something. And then start using still photography just to focus on faces.
Okay, 2 years ago today, you were in Sudan.
Wow, you guys did your research.
Okay. And I want you to read, this is a part of a child.
Going to make me read early.
Yes, a chapter called The Longest War, and this is about the Janjaweed. The part that I highlight, it's just a short paragraph.
Thank you.
Would you mind reading that?
No, not at all. Most of the men here say they joined the SPLA because of the atrocities committed against them by Arab tribal militias known as the Janjaweed. The SPLA claims the militias are sponsored by the government, a charge the Janjaweed denies.
This is the Sudanese People's Liberation Army. And I thought it was interesting that you presented a reason for people being involved in conflict. Did you find there was anything common about the reason people are in conflict? You visited all these different conflicts.
Well, if I went to all of these conflicts and some kind of truth didn't emerge in that time period, I'd be a pretty dense person. And there really was a truth, and that's that war poses as combat. It poses as the inherent drama, the shooting, the fighting, the armies, the guerrillas, when in reality it's collateral damage. We always hear the politicians in general say wars, there's always going to be a little collateral damage in war, civilian casualties. No, there might be a little combat. There's always collateral damage in war. It's always about civil destruction. That is the defining feature of war, and it lingers on for generations. Those battles may only last moments, you know, days or weeks, but that civil destruction goes on and on. And again, people would say to me, what is it? Is it religion that causes these things? It's all about resources. In every one of these conflicts I went to, it's all about resources. And you just had me read a passage from Sudan. At the very most basic level, they call their militias protect the cows. It's about protecting their resources.
Because the cow is the one thing.
The cow represents the economic life,
the one thing
of their tribe. Absolutely.
It's interesting also that you're very honest about you were watching a video where you saw a Chechen rebel cut off somebody's finger, and you said to yourself, I hope I never go to Chechnya.
Scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, and then you ended up there, but you saw a little bit of beauty in the way that people survived there.
It was amazing because there was there were two carpet bombing campaigns that happened in Chechnya, destroyed the city, and I found people living in that rubble still, years later. And I found an artist that had carved out a niche within one of these buildings. There was a kind of a comfortable little apartment that hadn't been bombed out within a building that was completely destroyed. And he was a painter, and he was painting landscapes of the Chechen countryside, and they were absolutely beautiful. But this art, this beautiful art, was occurring in the midst of rubble. And he was also raising a child there with his wife. And they had to go down and haul water up to their apartment, five floors up. But they were making a life. But they also knew that they couldn't live there forever. That was no future for their child. It was really interesting, almost a metaphor in some ways, living within the destruction.
You know, got to the end of your book, and I sort of made a bet with myself. Would there be a kumbaya ending, sort of, the world? And I've learned about people
so,
that way.
It?
No, you wrote that you're not particularly optimistic or more hopeful than
I'm
when
not.
You left on this assignment.
In fact, much less so, seeing this constant destruction and misery. But at the same time, I'm more motivated. The idea behind this is not that if this defeats my spirit in just covering it, imagine what it does to the people that live there. And what I saw time and time again was strength of spirit, resilience. And you have to honor that. You have to honor it by trying to solve the problems. And for me, it's about making people more aware. I think that's the first step.
Kevin Seitz is a journalist and author of In the Hot Zone, One Man, One Year, 20 Wars.